Welcome to the Life V Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Donald, and the title of today's episode is 15 Tips for Studying Abroad from a Study Abroad Advisor. Now, I have a great guest on the show today. His name is August Armbrister, and he is the Study Abroad Advisor at Mercer University. Today, August is going to give us an insider perspective and share 15 tips for studying abroad. Welcome to the show, August.
Thank you, Donald, for having me.
No problem. Now, before we begin today, can you tell us a little bit about your experiences abroad?
Definitely. When I was a junior at UNC, I went to Japan for a year. And my last semester at UNC, I spent studying abroad in Taiwan for a semester. And I loved it so much that I stayed for 4 years after I graduated. I worked, learned Mandarin, and really explored a really unique part of the world. And I must say, I did it affordably. So both terms ended up being more affordable due to scholarships I received, housing costs, cost of living, than if I were to have stayed at my home university for those terms. So you can go abroad, have a great experience, and also save money or spend what you're spending. It's very doable, right?
So yeah, now, as I said in this episode, August and I will be talking about 15 tips for studying abroad. As a quick note, I have also released two other episodes on the topic of study abroad. One is on how it changed my life, and the other is about how to study abroad at little to no cost to you. So be sure to check out those episodes and rate and review them on Podchaser and Apple Podcasts. Other than that, stay tuned, and we will be right back after these messages. Welcome back to the Life V Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Donald, and today I have Mr. August Armbrister as our special guest. In today's show, we are talking about 15 tips for studying abroad. Now, August, these tips are insights that you believe should be known to anyone thinking about study abroad, correct?
Definitely. There are tips that I've learned when I was a student, things that I've learned just through overcoming challenges, and also tips that my own students have shared coming back from their abroad journey. So they're going to help you as you navigate your own trips abroad.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, just to give our listeners a roadmap of where these tips fall, today we'll be giving tips in the categories of the study abroad process itself, budget/money insight, culture notes, and general tips.
Definitely. So we're hoping, you're going to learn a lot from this session, this podcast. And we hope as well you provide feedback about things that you like, things that you're going to apply, or tips that you have of your own to share with us.
Perfect. So August, what is that first step that you have for us?
This is a crucial tip, applying early. All right. We recommend you apply at least a year in advance just to make sure you address any potential challenges to your study abroad experience. For example, your ideal program may have limited spots. So if you're going on an exchange program, potentially, your program may have two or three seats. And after that, if they're filled, they're gone. And so your spot could have been filled. So if you apply early, a year in advance, you've got time to work on course approval, scholarships, housing, insurance, and also making sure that your spot is guaranteed. So we recommend at least a year in advance. You can do later, you can do a semester in advance. For some students, they can do that in a few months in advance prior to the deadline. But the earlier you prepare for your abroad program, the better chance you have of addressing any issues that may hinder or impact negatively your experience abroad. Now, Donna, you've been abroad a couple times.
Yeah.
How early did you apply? Did you feel that you applied early enough, or should you apply earlier in some cases?
I definitely think I applied early enough in all the cases. To go to Spain, I started the application a year early.
Okay.
So that's one that, you know, I worked on my personal statements and started contacting necessary people about a year in advance. Mm-hmm. And that gave me enough time to really take the time to work on the applications, get them refined, get them reviewed and everything. And when I was going to Japan, that one was shorter. It was about a 3-month time span, but that was also because that kind of popped up on my radar.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take advantage of that opportunity. But still, you know, that was 3 months and I was still taking the time to make sure that I was completing something each week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you have to complete everything early. Just as long as you're doing one thing a week, you know, whether it's just contacting the right person, it's still a step in the right direction. So that only happens though when you apply early. And I think that's super important. But yeah, applying early, super important. Definitely deserving of to be the first tip.
Thank you. All right, number two, understanding the difference in course rigor. When you go abroad, you're going to universities that have different teaching style, oftentimes in which you may be used to at your home university in the US. For example, if you're going abroad to the UK in particular, you may find a very different style of teaching where you have one or two assignments, maybe a presentation or an essay, and those are your entire grade. As opposed to in the US, we're used to assignments, homework, attendance, quizzes, exams that break up your grade. You have more chances to really either raise your grade and chances to really impact your grade, as opposed to a few really large pieces that compose your entire grade. Now, I've seen some students who struggled with this, and some students who've done really well abroad, they found the rigor to be less strenuous in some universities abroad. So you want to definitely ask your advisor before you depart, when you're in the planning process, what can I expect in terms of academic rigor abroad? That way you go abroad, you're prepared to do well. You're not going to struggle. You may need to, when you go abroad, to seek out faculty. It may not be as accessible as you're used to in terms of that one-on-one interaction. And so you want to understand the teaching model abroad. That way you go kind of day one, just ready to succeed.
Got you. Yeah, I can definitely see that. Because when I was abroad, Spain was a lot more difficult for me than Japan.
Okay, I can see that.
But because Japan was the class, you know, my lectures and stuff were in English. So I had that leg up there. And I think I was also more interested because that was mostly about trade relations and things. So that was super interesting, right up my alley. But in Spain, everything was in Spanish. I mean, it was still business classes that I was interested in. But I think it being in English really helped. But also just mentally, I think I was more interested in the trade relations versus just regular business strategies and things like that.
Yeah.
So it does play a part with not only being in that country, but also how your interests align with those classes that you're taking. So yeah, a great second tip. And so that kind of goes into the third one, right?
Definitely. Oh yeah, it's a good segue. And one common potential misconception I hear from students is that they can't go abroad with their major or with their affiliation on campus, whether they're an athlete or an ROTC. Now, this may be the case in terms of one ideal program. If you want to go abroad for a semester and you're an athlete and your semester abroad kind of aligns with your practice schedule or your season, that's definitely a conflict. But if you're flexible, you can go abroad for different opportunities. And so you can go for spring break programs, summer programs, again, semester, year-long programs. And if your school doesn't have a program that aligns with your interests or with your ideal term, you can also pursue third-party programs that are called affiliate providers, where you're essentially paying an outside organization to go abroad as opposed to going through your university. And so whether you're a STEM major, whether you're an athlete, or if you're doing ROTC, if you think your schedule is overwhelming or is very busy and you can't go abroad but you really want to, I would encourage you to be flexible, to consider different term lengths. Maybe a semester or a year isn't as feasible as a summer program over a month or 2 months or a spring break trip, but there are definitely programs for you for STEM majors. If you have multiple commitments, if you have two or three majors, you can figure out a way to go abroad with your advisor if you're flexible and you've considered a range of options.
Got you. Yeah, no, and it definitely helps also if you start applying early.
Definitely.
So you can kind of create that plan to figure out how you can get abroad if you're a STEM, if you're engineering or in ROTC or something like that. So yeah, perfect. And in order to figure that out, that leads to our fourth question. So I like how you set this up. That's really good.
I try my best.
So the fourth tip, everyone, is ask every question. So August, tell us about that.
This is crucial. And it's changed since when I was going abroad. It's about 10 years ago to now. The questions that I hear were not questions that we were asking, I think, 10 years ago. The conversations have changed a lot. I think there's topics that are of interest, that are pressing, have changed with time. And so this is your program abroad. This is your term abroad. This is your dream. You want to ask every question about anything on your mind, any concerns, any worries you may be having, because when you go abroad, you want to feel confident. You want to feel successful and empowered, whether it's about course rigor, whether it's about cultural differences, or an issue related to your identity. It could be your gender, your race, your background abroad that you think may come up, or that it may arise or influence your experience abroad. If you feel uncomfortable asking these questions, that's very natural. I think it's difficult to be vulnerable, especially when it's a personal issue. But your advisor is here to help you. They're here to help you find a resource. And they may not connect or be able to relate to the issue itself, but they're going to be able to help you find someone who can assist you, whether it be a counselor, whether it be a peer advisor, which are students who've been abroad and they come back to the abroad office and they help and they work with students, their peers, on issues related to study abroad, courses, experiences. And so if you have a question about studying abroad, ask it. Again, whether it be about housing, whether it be about obstacles related to your identity, whatever you want to ask, hopefully we want you to feel comfortable asking those questions, because it does play a big part in your experience abroad.
Perfect. That's perfect. And so that kind of closes out the study abroad process tips themselves. And now we're moving into budget and money, with the fifth tip being ideal program versus better budget fit.
Yes. So, for example, I have students who come into my office and they want to go to London. Now, we have a new London program, but prior to that, we didn't have one in London in England. And so they had to go through an affiliate provider to go to London. And that was some students' dream location. August, I want to go to London. I'm like, we can make this happen. But for some students, the financials didn't align with what students had in mind. It was too expensive. It wasn't as affordable as they would have liked. But we have exchange programs in England and Colchester, for example. It's an hour and a half from London. And so you may not be in your ideal city, but you can be in your ideal environment, and you can commute to your ideal location on weekends, during breaks. And so you have the best of both worlds. And so the exchange programs for many students worked better, not for every student too. So it's a case by case basis. But sometimes your ideal program, your ideal school location may not be the best money-wise for you. So again, being flexible is going to really be key in allowing you to find the best program for you, not only for your academics, but for your budget. And so if you have more money available to you, you can do more abroad. If you go abroad to one location that may be unaffordable, maybe too expensive, maybe you've used all your resources for traveling, for buying food, souvenirs, as opposed to going somewhere a better budget fit and doing more with your money, doing more with your experience.
That's smart. And so, speaking about the money and being able to do more with your money, one of the things that we have to look out for is that sixth tip of ATM fees.
Yes. Okay, so this is crucial, and I learned this mainly by struggling. I'm not going to even try to seem like, yes, I know all about this. I learned this through going through it. So when you go abroad, you want to be aware that withdrawing money from ATMs, there's going to be a fee from the ATM oftentimes, the foreign ATM, and your bank may also charge you for withdrawing internationally. So you've been charged twice to withdraw your own money. Now, there are ways to mitigate this. You can look into opening up an account that does not charge you a foreign transaction fee, such as a Charles Schwab was popular when I was a student. This is very crucial in figuring out the best way to withdraw money, how much you're going to withdraw at one time without being charged too many fees, because that's your money. And that's money you could be using again for food, souvenirs, traveling, fun, but it's being pretty much wasted.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. No, I can definitely relate to that. I wish I would have looked into that more myself when I was going abroad. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so next we have four. The culture, that's our next category.
It's a good section.
All right. And so our seventh tip deals with the international bubble.
Yes.
Talk to me about it, August.
So when you go abroad, as I think many people are looking forward to, is meeting friends from all around the world. You're going to go to your abroad school, be surrounded by really unique, awesome, and charismatic friends from different parts of the globe. And what happens that's very unique is that being different actually makes you similar. And so you're all foreigners in a new country, and that really helps you bond and click. And you realize, you know what, we're the same because of our differences in this location. And what happens sometimes, you get comfortable in that bubble. It's very safe. It's very secure. You relate because, again, you have that shared cultural difference. And sometimes you end up staying a little bit too comfortable in that space, and you don't branch out and immerse yourself into the local culture. You don't make as many local friends because, again, there's that comfort in that international space, which is definitely fun. You want to have a balance of international friends and friends from the local culture in the country abroad. But I've seen students when they come back, like, hey, August, you know what? I wish I would have branched out more and made more local friends as opposed to hanging out with my friends from the international community. And again, there's a balance, and there's no right or wrong experience, but I've seen students who they do wish they would have branched out a little bit more. And so I would encourage you to make as many friends as possible, but definitely make the effort to engage and immerse yourself in local culture.
Mm-hmm. And so that kind of directly leads us into the eighth tip of researching social and cultural norms of your abroad country.
Yes.
And so that's a big one, right?
It definitely is. And so before you go abroad, you want to have an idea of cultural differences and things that are the norm abroad that may not be the norm of what you're used to. For example, you may be used to running around your college campus in your running outfit, workout outfit, or in your city. But when you go abroad, you realize that is not an actual custom. That's not the norm. That's actually very odd, and you stand out, and that could cause some issues in your experience abroad. For example, when I went to Japan, whistling, it was a common, I think, a pastime or just a habit for many people where I'm from in the U.S. But in Japan, that is a taboo. That can attract snakes, that can attract spirits. And I was corrected by my host family that that's a thing that is taboo. It's not a norm here. And I was like, oh, wow. And I really wish I would have known that beforehand and done my research. And so you want to, before you leave, just research norms about, it could be clothing, things that you wear that may not be appropriate or the norm abroad that you're used to. That when you go abroad, you're not experiencing any obstacles that, you know, you could have avoided. So definitely research social and cultural norms before you leave. Now, Donna, you've been abroad to Spain and Japan. Did you experience anything that you kind of wish you would have known prior to leaving?
I don't know if this is like a true social or cultural norm, but when I was in Japan, it was very hard for me to get used to the trash can system that they had. Just every trash can had a different color.
It's very precise.
I held onto a popsicle stick for about 6 hours because I did not know what trash can to put this popsicle stick in, and I didn't want
to
put it in the wrong one.
You were attached
and get in trouble.
You loved it.
Yeah. You know, me and that popsicle stick went all around Tokyo.
Okay.
And I finally found it in an American store, and they had a regular trash can.
Okay.
And so I put it in there, but it was a journey. Like, I did not know what trash can to put it in. I don't know Japanese, so yeah. I was just looking at it, and I was trying to, there weren't many images, so I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to hold on to this popsicle stick, because I don't want to do the wrong thing. But that's definitely something I could have looked more into, you know, that I would have found out if I looked more into the social and cultural norms of the country, for sure.
And you'll learn these things through just living abroad and going through the day-to-day, but you can definitely get a heads up and a head start and just being more knowledgeable about certain things if you do your research, ask your advisor prior to leaving.
Yeah, for sure. And so that takes us into our ninth tip. If we get out of our international bubble and we research more on the social and cultural norms, that helps us do that ninth tip of going off the beaten path.
Yes, this is, I think, what made my experience very memorable, and for many of my peers, is you want to go and do and pursue the popular tourist attractions. Obviously, that's kind of the highlight of many abroad trips, is you're going abroad for this particular experience that you've dreamt about, you've read about, you've seen your friends post on social media. But there are these really cool hidden gems, so to speak, that you can also experience and explore safely, you know, in a group setting. by asking locals and by going off the beaten path, so to speak. For example, during New Year's in Japan, my friends and I went to a shrine, which is a custom. You go to a shrine and you make wishes for the new year, for prosperity, health, and all these sorts of things. And that was the custom, to our knowledge. You know, you go to the shrine, make wishes, and then we go, about half of us go back to the dorms after we make our wishes, because that's what we expected. And then some of my Japanese friends said, hey, I was going to go somewhere else, come with us. I'm like, okay, where are you guys going? I thought this was the end of it. It's midnight too, so I'm kind of tired. And they take us to a beach, and they tell us watching the sunrise, the first sunrise of the new year, is also a custom. And I didn't know that. And they took us to this beach, and this rock beach. And hearing the waves hit the rocks, it was the eeriest. It was beautifully eerie. Like, it was this gorgeous, like, haunting sound. And we watched the sunrise. We were there until like 6 a.m. in the morning. And I wouldn't have had that experience had I not, you know, gone up the beaten path and said yes and gone with the group safely. Again, you want to always travel safely. So you're going to find this awesome experiences and memories from guidebooks, from popular websites. But if you interact with the local community and culture, you're going to really be able to find these hidden gems that you're going to look fondly on in hindsight.
Perfect. All right. And so that finishes our For the Culture category, and we're moving into general tips now. And so our 10th tip is dormitory versus host family.
Yes, dormitory, host family, both have pros and cons. Neither one is better than the other. They're just different fits for different students, depending on the experience they want to have. Your dormitory stay is very convenient if you want to be close to campus, if you want to be around international students and have maximum freedom. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be really ideal, generally for longer stays, semesters or years, but not always. Some students, they want to live with a host family. That's their dream. They want to be able to be immersed 24/7 in the culture, in the language. They want to have home cooked meals, which are delicious. I had that experience in Japan. Phenomenal. Am I drooling right now? I might be drooling a little bit right now. They want to, again, be immersed in the culture, but it may not always be as close to campus as a dormitory. You may have to commute to your school if you're with the host family. And so, again, both have pros and cons, and they may benefit you. So maybe for a short term, a host family may be a better fit, but not always. I've had students who've been abroad for a semester with a host family who've loved it. Now, Donald, what did you experience abroad? Were you in a dormitory or with a host family?
I was always with a host family. Okay. I think a dormitory, I would say that I'm glad I was in a host family for both of those. Mm-hmm. Kind of looking back, I enjoyed the host family experience, especially in both Spain and Japan. So, I mean, the food was amazing. That was the top tier reason for the host family for me. 100%. It was just so good. And I just really enjoyed kind of being with people who were from the country and had lived in the country, just kind of hearing them and just seeing what was important to them. I think that was important for me as a development. So I don't have the experience of a dormitory, but I'm really glad that I did the host family. And so the next thing is traveling light. I'm a big proponent for this one. Let's talk about it.
It can be a challenge, but if you can, if you're willing to put in that effort, traveling light is going to benefit you in a number of ways. You're going to be able to, again, go abroad with less burden, with less kind of belongings that can kind of weigh you down and burden you, which I know is tough for many students who are going abroad because they want to bring really everything that's important to them. They want to bring the best outfits, all your toiletries, many of your belongings, which you can do, but it may weigh you down and it may cost you money at the airport in terms of baggage fees. So if you can travel light and really bring the essentials and try to be a minimalist in some sense in bringing the things that you use the most. And so maybe you bring the outfits you use the most in a month. You don't bring your entire, wardrobe, so to speak. And when you go abroad, you can also buy certain things. You can buy toiletries, you can buy items, bedding and certain things. And it may be more affordable. It may work in your favor with the exchange rate to buy certain things overseas as opposed to bulking and buying things in bulk before you leave.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Because right now I'm packing and I've completely redid my whole wardrobe. I'm doing all solid colors so I can kind of take that minimalistic step, you know, and just kind of shrink down my wardrobe, but also maximize the amount of outfits I can take. And yeah, when I was in Spain, I could buy some body wash, you know, for like 3-4 euros, and it was cheaper than me buying it here in the States. And I got more, like it was bigger, it was more ounces. And so that's definitely things you can look at, those like little staple items. You don't have to pack them in your suitcase. You can buy those in the host country probably for cheaper. So yeah, no, definitely figure out the ways you can pack light, y'all.
And it's tough.
Super important.
It's tough. And so again, it takes a little bit of effort. You may want to ask your advisor for a list of the essentials.
Yeah.
But if you can travel light, it's going to help you, again, to be able to bring some things back, souvenirs, if you have that space in your luggage. And so traveling light is going to be a really key tip.
For sure. And so that leads us into our 12th tip. The 12th tip is language fluency will come. What does that mean, August?
So many students, I think it's just a part of the times in marketing. We see these ads on social media, on Facebook, websites. You're going to become fluent in 3 months, in 6 months.
Yeah.
And there's this pressure that I see students have that I had to, because you want to improve, you want this skill to grow and develop so you can apply it in your future for your career, for your own goals, but you want to become fluent very quickly. And you put this pressure and weight on yourselves when you go abroad. You're trying to watch your progress constantly, you know, day by day, like, oh, I'm not getting better. Week by week, you're like, you know, I don't see any difference. Language fluency will come over time. It may not arrive in 3 months or in 6 months. It may take you a couple of years, but you will get better. You will get more and more proficient. So I would have students just remember to be kind to yourself in terms of the standards you set. Be realistic, because if you are so worried about this fluency, it's going to cause you some distress because you may not see the progress day to day or week to week. When you look back over time, in a month, in 2 months, you'll be able to note that, you know what, I am getting better. It's becoming easier for me to think in that foreign language as opposed to kind of translating in my head.
Yeah.
So it will come over time. I would just take things slowly, enjoy your experience, and you're going to see that growth.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that one, because I was thinking that when I went to Spain, I was going to just pick up Spanish just like that. But, you know, it doesn't work like that. It does take that time. So, yeah, I agree. So this tip 13, this one is a big one for me. I wasted a lot of money on this one. And this one is unlocked phone / purchasing a SIM card.
Yes. So there are a few plans for your phone when you go abroad. You've got options. You're not bound to anything. You may be bound.
That contract might be there.
It depends on your contract. That's right. But a popular option is unlocking your phone, if it's not already unlocked, and then acquiring a SIM card abroad. That's going to allow you to keep your phone. You're already used to it. It's very comfortable. You get a prepaid SIM card at the airport or at a convenience store in your abroad country, and you're paying as you go. As opposed to being locked to a contract, you have the freedom to use a SIM card, to change SIM cards, to change plan money when you see fit, to travel to different countries, get a SIM card there, so you're free to really roam and use your phone as you please, as opposed to being bound into a contract. And so if you have a U.S. carrier that you want to use abroad, that's fine. If that's your preference, if that's your desire, just be aware of the cost of that, roaming fees, other fees associated with using that phone abroad. And so unlocked phone is very popular for travelers, so they can just acquire a SIM card abroad. But there are other options too, right, Donald?
Yeah. For me, this one kicked me hard when I was in Spain. So, you know, I had that Boost Mobile, broke college student life. So it got me through, you know, $55 unlimited everything. But Boost Mobile does not work in Spain.
Okay.
So I tried to get one of my phones unlocked. I had a newer phone from Boost Mobile. I wanted to get it unlocked, but I hadn't had the phone long enough for them to agree to unlock it.
Right.
So I had to use one of my older phones on Boost Mobile. So I ended up taking both phones with me to Spain. And then I didn't, you know, the SIM card there, I was having too many problems getting it to work on the Boost Mobile phone that was unlocked. So I ended up getting a phone from the school that I was attending, and that cost even more money and everything. And so I now had three phones I was always walking around with because I didn't want to leave my phones just laying anywhere. And so it became a hassle, you know, and I could have saved money if I had started looking more into how I can mitigate that process. Mm-hmm. I learned that Google Fi is perfect for me. I have Google Fi now. I wish I could go back and tell my younger self that, yo, you should look into Google Fi. It's a great service, and it works, and it's perfect for people who are going to study abroad. There's no contracts or anything, and Google works like everywhere.
Are you an employee for Google?
You know, hey, if anybody from Google or Google Fi is listening, I would love to be an affiliate or anything. Just hit me up at lifevlifestyle@gmail.com, and we can link. I'll be more than happy to talk to you. But let's get on to this 14th tip. All right, so this 14th tip is keeping a journal. Tell me about it.
Keeping a journal is crucial, and it's not a very popular, I think, a well-known piece of advice. When you go abroad, your memories are they're treasures, and you want to be able to maintain them as they are. And so if you write down your day-to-day experiences, you can look back and really just smile at the things that you experienced, that you went through. You also see your growth, which is huge. You're going to be able to track with this journal how you've progressed abroad, the ideas that you've learned, how your mindset changed too from these new ideas, this new culture that you've been immersed in. For me, when I go back in my journal, I cringe sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's a good cringe. Same. Because you see where you were and you see where you are now. And it's just, wow, was I really like that? I thought like that. Or, wow, it's awesome seeing my progression and how international my mindset has become.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Mine definitely changed after going to Japan and Spain. Changed my whole career outlook and everything. Yeah. But yeah, so let's hit this 15th tip. And this one is a big one that I think is really important. And August, you feel is really important too. So go ahead and lead us into it.
Mental health and study abroad. I love the field of study abroad. It's an amazing job to have. It's an amazing duty to help students go abroad. And I feel mental health is one aspect that is often kind of under-highlighted. Mm-hmm. We kind of glamorize the travel aspect, the study aspect. But when you go abroad, you're living life, right? You're going abroad and you're still living your life in a new environment, which may pose some obstacles. There's the initial euphoria when you go abroad. It's exciting. Everything is new. It's a great experience. But you may also have times where you feel homesick or lonely or sad, and you experience a range of emotions that are normal for your experience. And I think students sometimes may feel uncomfortable sharing this because they're abroad and everything seems glamorous on social media. Their friends post certain pictures and things, and they're like, oh no, why do I feel like this? What you're feeling is about experience, and to help you have the best experience possible, you want to be able to talk about what you're going through, whether it's a good experience or a negative experience, with a friend, with your family, with your advisor, or with a counselor at school, because everything may not always be cheery overseas, because again, you're living life. You may be abroad in Spain, in Morocco, in Japan, and in Brazil, but you're still living your life with people living their lives, and you're going to go through the similar things that you've kind of been going through in the U.S. It's life.
Yeah, that is so true. We definitely, it's a beauty now that we could take the time to focus on our mental. And I think that's a great way to kind of close this out. And so we have just made it through the 15 tips. And now with all that insight you shared today, August, what is the top, let's say the top tip? The top tip.
Number one?
Yeah, the top one tip.
Why are you putting me in the hot seat like
this? The top one tip. What is it?
All right. The number one tip out of all 15.
I can guess it. It's apply early.
Apply early, for exactly. Sure. Applying early, because that's going to help your advisor and yourself address every other potential question or tip or issue that you may have on your mind. Mm-hmm. I would say applying early. Now, you put me in a hot seat, Donald. I got to repay the favor.
Uh-huh.
what would you say would be your number one tip out of all 15 that you would advise students?
My number one tip. I would have to say apply early as well, because if you don't apply early, you risk not being able to go in a program at all. And then the rest of these tips don't even matter.
Yeah.
So I would have to say apply early is my number one tip as well. Take that time to make sure that you're putting the best application forward possible, that you're putting your best foot forward possible.
Okay.
That's a perfect takeaway to give the listeners. Now, with all that said, I want everyone listening to the sound of my voice to do two things for me. Number one, share this episode with your friends. Share the knowledge. Drop that surprise wisdom form. Number two, head on over to Twitter and tell me a location where you would like to study abroad. If you have already gone abroad, say the location where you went and add a tip or insight that you learned while there. And also add the hashtag surprise wisdom to your tweets, all right? So encourage your friends to do it too. Let's make this a thing. I'm super excited to see that engagement. And so that's all for today. Thanks again, August, for taking the time to come on the show. And to all of my listeners, be sure to subscribe to the Life V Lifestyle podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, so you can get immediate alerts when new episodes are released. If you have any questions or topic ideas about what you would like to hear next, go to podchaser.com/LifeVLifestyle and rate, review, and comment on the episode. Of course, you can hit me up on Twitter, like I said, at Life V Lifestyle. Be sure to show the podcast some love on all the platforms you use, too. So I'm talking about Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, etc. And as always, I wish you much success in your Life V Lifestyle journey. Till next time.